Hey guys, in this week's episode, we're tackling some pretty heavy topics. If any of this resonates with you and you're sitting in a dark space, please know that you're not alone. We do have some links in the show notes if you feel like you want to connect with a professional and talk more in depth about what you're going through. Please know that we are here for you and you are not alone.
Hey Zen friends, welcome to Crazy Zen Life. I'm your host, Brittany Swan.
And I'm your host, Shannon Kessler. Join us as we navigate life on and off our yoga mats.
It's Monday and we're thankful to be back in the closet studio. Welcome back, guys. And are you thankful today,
Shannon? I'm so thankful today. Actually, I'm actually really thankful to have a new start. I felt like last week I was like kind of, I was stuck in traffic like all the time. Like I was trying to go and it was stop and go. And I'm like, I am just done with this week. I need a new fresh start. So I'm actually very excited that it's Monday. I'm like, okay.
I know, with the election and kids getting out of school, it was a very stop and start kind of week.
Yes, and we had just come off of fall break, so I felt like we were trying to get into a rhythm of things, and then we had 2 days off, and I'm like, we're stuck again, what are we doing, where are we going?
Anytime you go to the store and you're only buying like five things just to get through that day, I did that like five times last week. Like,
yes.
Okay, I'm just going to grab these five things and I'll just rush home.
Right.
I'm like, I should... The days I can go to the store and, like, enjoy going, I'm like, that's when I know my week's going to go off really well.
Do you feel like you can enjoy shopping or get your shopping done when you have all three kids with you?
Oh, it's definitely not enjoyable.
No.
I don't think Kroger enjoys it. I think Kroger wants me to leave.
They're like, you need to go. And yeah. You take your children.
Oh, and Fresh Time. And Trader Joe's. I equally distribute the craziness around Louisville, so, like, everyone knows, like, listen, I bring it all to you.
Right. It's happening.
So
right.
No one knows my trends. We still keep you guessing, like, oh, they haven't been here in 3 weeks. Thank God.
We needed a break. We can't do it.
Yes.
When I was growing up, if I got in trouble, like if I was late for, you know, curfew or whatever, my mom would make me do grocery shopping with her on Sunday afternoons. Oh, talk about.
I always wanted to go.
No,
I hate the grocery store.
I hate going alone.
Yeah,
I hate going alone.
Oh, man.
So I used to see you alone.
I always have to go alone.
Me, I'm like, yay, I'm alone. And Lisa's like,
I used to have a friend that would go to the grocery shopping with me. It was the best.
Are you serious? Yeah. That's a very good friend.
I don't know. She'd be like, are you going to Kroger today? I'm like, yeah.
So now, would you guys shop together, like one cart or two carts?
No, it was just me shopping.
That is really a good friend.
That's a good friend.
Yeah, that's a great friend.
Mm-hmm. And if you're wondering the voice that you're hearing, this is Elise Hawkins, and she's in the studio with us today. We're talking about some serious stuff, but I think it's something that we need to be more open with, and this was an idea that I'd had a long time ago, and I'm so thankful to have Elise in the studio today, because she is such a bright light around the city of Louisville. She spreads a lot of cheer, a lot of gratitude, and yeah, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
I love your sparkly soul.
Well, I love you guys.
So Elise, are you born and raised in Louisville? Are you from here?
Well, Jeffersonville, Indiana, but basically, yeah. I went to school in Louisville. I went to Presentation all girls school, so I have a lot of Louisville friends, and then I've pretty much lived here, I mean, most of my life, yeah.
Cool. So so you went to Presentation. So do your parents still live in...
Yeah, my whole family. Like, I have a brother and a sister and my parents, and they live in Jeff.
Okay, so you get to see them still. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's great.
That's cool. So you went to an all-girls school. How was that?
I actually loved it. I chose to go there. I didn't want to go to the co-ed high school in southern Indiana. So I, like, researched all the different all-girls schools, and I actually picked it because I liked their orientation packet the best. But then it was like I was meant to be there. I mean, just, it was a wonderful place, and I really feel like it would be a great opportunity for any female to go to an all-girls school. It really built me, like, as a person, as a female, and just, it did a lot for me.
What are some of the benefits you think you got out of being at an all-girls school?
Well, I was painfully shy growing up, so it helped me not be so, like, terrified. Mm-hmm. I feel like you make better friendships when there's not boys involved. You know, there's not so much jealousy and competition. And they just did a really good job at really focusing on female leaders and, like, you know, getting out there and, you know, not being afraid to fail and, you know, challenge yourself.
That's great.
Do you still maintain these friendships that you've made through the years?
I mean, not not very well, honestly. We've kind of all spread around. I mean, we're all still friends on Facebook, so I'll check in on people. But I'm actually, that's something I'm really bad about, is maintaining friendships. Mm-hmm. I'm working on that.
Well, hey, there's always going to be something that you're, you know, that you can see. You're like, you know what, I can do better in this arena, mm-hmm. and this is where I want to focus on. So I feel like when you get to acknowledge that, you're like, okay, mm-hmm. step one. I always feel like sometimes that's like the hardest part is like, I don't know, maybe it's not me. And then you're like, ooh, wait a minute.
Definitely
it's definitely me.
But manicuring and watering those gardens in your 30s or mm-hmm. how old are you now?
I'm 33.
Okay. It's super difficult. And we should probably do a podcast about that. Like how, you know, having friendships in your 30s look a lot different than your 20s.
So different.
And especially like these childhood friendships. I don't know if some last 20, 30, 50 years, and I think that's amazing. And then some are meant to just be there for a little bit. Right. And I think that both offer beauty, but it's hard. Mm-hmm. A lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought marriage was work.
Yeah, I know.
And you do. Life gets involved. You know, it's really hard. So, okay. So, so you went to an all-girls school. So tell us about a little bit about your struggles and maybe like why we have you in today.
Okay. I guess you're referencing a post I made last year. I would say since I was probably around 8 years old, I kind of struggled with feelings of like self-hatred and just like body dysmorphia. So that's something that I carried into high school. And I think that's part of why I wasn't really great about maintaining friendships. I was always just kind of sad. And I think I self-isolated a lot. And then I mean, I was on a swim team, so I swam year-round. So I just kind of focused on that, just swimming and school, and then didn't really put a lot into relationships. And then when I graduated high school, I went to IU Bloomington my freshman year, mm-hmm. and I was the only one that went. So I didn't know anybody there, and I really struggled. I got really depressed, and my mom made me come home. So then I switched to IUS, and shortly after that, started dating a guy, and so he, of course, was my only friend, basically. You know, mm-hmm. I had friends.
You get immersed in the relationship.
Yeah, I didn't have strong other friendships. So then after, like, 2 years, we broke up, and that, I didn't handle it well. And so kind of those body dysmorphia feelings kind of, I guess, exaggerated, and I became anorexic, so...
I'm going to ask you a question. So, during the dating period of the boyfriend, mm-hmm. did you still have these thoughts, or were they put on pause?
Yeah, no.
Did you feel validation from him that you didn't need to have these thoughts?
No, I mean, I definitely still struggled with it. I've never really liked to say this, but, like, I would always in my head just be like, I hate myself, I hate myself. Like, I would just... It was like my mantra. I would just repeat mm-hmm. it over and over. And I was just always mad at myself, but I think having him, I was able to keep it under control. But then, like, when he left, then I was like, well, I'm nothing, you know? Mm. And it just kind of spiraled down from there. And so I guess eating became, like, the only thing I could control. So I was, like, restrictive. I would eat around 500 calories a day, and I'd work out, like, 4 to 5 hours. Like, insane.
Wow.
So, that continued, probably went on for around 5 months, and I just...
Now, did your mom, were you living at home during this?
Yeah, I lived at home, and they were, like, mad at me. I mean, we would get into fights mm-hmm. all the time. My dad was like, you have to eat. And okay. I was like, you can't make me, I'm not eating.
Right. So they saw the signs.
Oh, yeah. I weighed, like, 100 pounds, and right now I weigh 130. So I was, like, 30 pounds lighter. Wow. And it just got so bad, I just felt hopeless. And so then the weekend of Thanksgiving, so like that Sunday night, I tried to kill myself. And that was kind of, that was the...
Oh, wow. That was the rock bottom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, not to get too in-depth with that, was it something that you had planned? Or was this
I had been thinking about it for a while, and actually... A little plug for like schools, they actually offer free counseling services. So if you're in college and you're having a hard time, definitely look into that. But I had started seeing a counselor, and he had kind of teased out of me that I was having suicidal feelings and had developed a plan. And so he called my parents and they took me to Wellstone. And so I had an outpatient evaluation, and they, you know, referred me for services. And then the following week, I actually went through with it.
You went through with
my plan.
Your plan. Mm-hmm. Okay. And can you talk us through?
Yes.
So I'd had surgery, I guess, 2 years before that. So I still had almost a whole bottle of, like, hydrocodone. Okay. So I had planned to take that. But my parents knew about that. So they had taken that bottle. Mm-hmm. So then there were still some other pill bottles downstairs. So I took like half a bottle of Tylenol and then a couple of hydrocodones that I found, and then like half a bottle of Motrin. I mean, stuff that, like, basically I wasn't going to be able to die from it, but it would have really caused some organ failure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Over time.
Yeah.
If you weren't.
Yeah.
Okay. So who found this? How did you tell them? Did you immediately, like, regret your decision?
Well, I was, like, I was starting to have really bad tremors. I was laying in my bed, and, like, my whole body was twitching, and I felt, like, really weird. And so I went and I crawled into bed with my mom, and, like, I was crying. And so she, like, grabbed me and was like, "What did you do?" And I told her. So then she took me to the hospital, mm-hmm. and, so then I had to take charcoal, which, as an ER nurse, it's actually really embarrassing to talk about that.
Right.
Because, you know, there's a lot of judgment with it. And then also, I was like that crazy girl with charcoal all over me. Like,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, walking down the halls in mm-hmm. a gown, psychotic. And I know the nurses were all very rude, and it was just a really hard time.
Yeah.
Right.
So I ended up going to Wellstone for a week.
And for people who don't know what Wellstone is,
it's an inpatient psychiatric place over in Indiana.
Like volunteer or?
No, it was I was on a hold.
Okay. So what did you discover there?
It's actually interesting. I did not, first of all, so I'm a nurse, and I'm actually going back to school. I'm getting my doctorate in mental health to be a nurse practitioner. And one thing that really, really bothered me was how mean the staff was. Like, my first day there, we had to go to lunch, and when I came back, the door to my room was locked, and so I went to the nurse's station, and I was like, "Hey, can you let me in my room?" And the nurse just kind of, like, gave me this look and was like, "You just ate. You're not allowed to go to your room." And just, you know how, like,
yeah. mm-hmm.
it just made me feel so small. So the staff...
Like, you have this problem.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like, she was judging me, and... Mm-hmm. And I just cried because, so the behavioral side was full. So I was in a unit with all, like, recovering drug addicts.
Okay.
So here I am, like, this little naive girl. And
how old were you at the time?
I was 22.
22. Okay.
Right. Yeah, 22. And so... It was a co-ed floor, but it was mostly male, and they were all, you know, like heroin users, some were alcoholics, just people that I had never seen before, basically, just total different walk of life. And I didn't get a lot of the therapy there or the medications, but it was being around those guys and just seeing, like, what is my problem? You know, I don't even have a problem. These people are the ones that are really struggling. So I think that experience really kind of opened my eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like when you were there for a week, what did you feel like you saw internally? I mean, was there a point where you're like, I mean, I know you said, I don't have this, you know, I'm not here for a drug problem, but internally when you were ready to go, was there something that you kind of were like, yes, a light bulb clicked or something?
Not really. I would say I wanted to get out so bad because I wanted to go work out. Like, I was dying that I could not work out. I was just still so obsessed with that, and I couldn't control what I was eating. Mm-hmm. And it was...
So it's a tailspin.
Yeah,
so this this was just like, I have to be here, so I'm just going to follow the rules until I get out.
Oh, yeah. I was...
Do you feel like a lot of people do that?
I'm sure. Yeah. It's like, what do I have to say to get out of here?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when you got out, do you feel like it helped, or do you feel like...
Well, I got out.
So what did your recovery look like after that?
I got out on a Friday, and I immediately went to the gym and worked out. And I will say that I didn't do it right. I didn't do the outpatient services that I was supposed to do afterwards. And I basically, in my family, we avoid anything that's a problem. So I just pretended like it didn't happen.
Just pushed it down. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pushed it under the rug, pushed it down. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to talk too much, were you open with anyone about your struggles? Mm-mm. Did you talk outwardly about it? It just needed to go away. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a scar that never healed and was still bleeding.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is very similar to when I was in high school, I also had an eating disorder. Uh-huh. I was bulimic, and it stemmed from a bad relationship. And, you know, so like I totally relate and can see exactly where you're coming from. And there were so many times in it that I remember, I mean, I can remember head in the toilet being like, why am I here? Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
But it didn't stop.
You couldn't control it.
But it didn't want to stop. I was like, nope, can't. Yeah. No, I'm here. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I get that. And I get like that spiraling, like out of control. Like when does it stop? But I think you do have, there has to be a time where just enough is enough. Like either the fear, you just have to face it. And you're like, I don't want to be scared anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be doing this. I'm tired of brushing my teeth.
Like, oh my gosh.
Like every 5 minutes I get that. Like,
see, I was so jealous. I tried to vomit so many times. Yeah. I was like, so jealous of people that could vomit.
You're like, well, I'll just control it here.
Right. Yeah.
Exercise. I see, and that's like I couldn't be in. I'm like, I just like food too much.
Like, I like the flavor.
I do. I'm like, I like tastes delicious on the way down and the way back up. I mean, that shit's.
But I there's just
the
thing, broccoli. Like,
disease just looks broccoli. Different.
It does.
Yeah. Do you still eat broccoli today?
No, I won't eat it hardly. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
interesting.
I like have an aversion. Every now and again, but not very often.
Only when it's roasted.
Yeah, I do like roasted.
But I know it is true. Like it, you know. Diseases are so different and they look different and you guys are perfect examples of that. Mm-hmm. So, but in the end, they're kind of the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the same process, the same obsessiveness, the same hamster wheel.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Over and over. So you said that you went to work out right after rehab or and then we swept it under the rug. Mm-hmm. So what did recovery look like for you after that? So tell me, like walk us through maybe like your mental process and, you know, maybe shed some light on like how you dig yourself out of these dark holes.
Okay. So actually I developed a new friendship. My friend Mindy, who I said forever, like saved my life. She offered me a job at LAC teaching classes. So I started teaching there. It'll be, it was 10 years in January. So, I think one of my main problems was just such low self-esteem and, you know, the self-hatred. And so by teaching at LAC, first of all, it was terrifying. Like before every class, I almost was in a panic attack. I mean, like I'm in a stall, like breathing, like, why am I doing this? I can't do this. But then it just really built my confidence that I was up there like leading a class. And it really, really helped me a lot. Kind of just find my purpose again.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
So find your purpose.
Yeah, it's amazing what self-confidence can do. And when you don't have it, like this is like the opposite does happen where you have the feeling of self-hatred and you're like, why am I not good enough for anything? Like I'm not even good enough to be in this body I have. So let me get rid of it. Let me how small can I shrink myself down to? And I mean it's hard. And it's I feel like that's something that even it can take a lifetime to feel not even like you've got it, but like every day you feel more comfortable in it. And like eventually you just get to the point where the comfort is there and you're like, okay, I got this. Like my body can support me and my mind can support my body. And like together we can work this out.
Right.
But it's like as soon as one of those things get off balance, you're like, well, shit, I don't know which one to listen to. Like,
right.
It's like, I don't know.
So would you say like you teaching classes was the beginning of the end of the isolation?
Yes. Yeah. It really made me have to, you know, talk to people more, develop relationships. I do feel like too much of it, I was associating my identity with teaching classes then. And so actually like 6 years ago, I kind of went through a weird kind of like, you know, what are they, a midlife crisis, a mid-20s yes. crisis oh, yeah. or something?
Quarter life crisis.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So,
that's a thing. So don't feel bad. Okay. Like, it happens to
it
a lot of people.
Real. Yeah. Yeah. So I actually quit teaching at LAC for a while, and I got super depressed again because I was like, oh, I just like lost my whole purpose in life. And then shortly thereafter, I signed up for a marathon. So then I started running, and then I went into triathlon. And so then I kind of like started associating my identity with triathlon. But I feel like doing triathlons actually really helped me get a hold of diet. Like, I was still restrictive. Mm-hmm. Teaching classes allowed me, because I would teach like 20 to 30 classes a week.
Oh my.
Yeah. I mean, it was nuts. I don't even know how I did it.
I don't understand
well,
how you did it.
Well, I worked a weekend job as a nurse specifically so I could teach classes Monday through Friday.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I'd teach 4 or 5 classes a day. And then I would still really restrict my diet. Mm. So I still did not have a hold. I was just using that as a way to control. And so when I started triathlon, I actually had to eat to perform.
Sure.
Yeah. So it really helped me kind of like break the cycle of you can gain some weight and not like
and
be a bad
person. It can actually be a great thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can build muscle.
Yeah.
Right.
And have you developed a sense of community even through like your Ironman training? Can you tell us about like your community there?
So hold on. Okay. You went from running a marathon to competing in triathlons, and then you competed in an Ironman?
Well, so I signed up for Ironman before I'd even done a triathlon. I was like, I'm just
I mean, talk about baller. I mean, wow. I'm gonna jump all in.
She is teaching 30 classes a week. She's like, right. I got this.
I was like, oh, I'll be fine. It'll be fine. And I could swim, which...
Oh, yeah, because you have swimming background.
Yeah, and I'd been teaching cycling, and I just had done a marathon, so I was like, oh, I can do this. This is fine.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, for those who don't know, it is not like deal just to do an Ironman. So the fact that Wonder Woman over here is like, yes, I'm like, wow.
Her cape is in her purse. This is crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, so fun.
But that is a true testament to where your confidence was.
Yeah.
And how
amazing.
It grew.
Yes. That's
I feel
fantastic.
Like that's amazing.
Thanks.
I mean, you're not really patting yourself on the back on that one.
Yeah, I'm like,
maybe looking back, you're like, man, maybe I
think I always set the bar too high. I'm like, oh, I'll do that. Like, that sounds good.
That's
and
amazing.
Then I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually, they talked me into doing a half Ironman before I did a full. So I ended up doing a half. And I was like, this is fun.
Yeah. Can you tell us what a half is for our listeners?
Yeah, it's 70.3 miles. So it's a 1.2 mile swim, a 56 mile bike, and then a half marathon, so 13.1.
Still legit.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy.
No. I mean, I think any of those taken apart isn't easy, and then you add them all together.
One day.
Actually feel like I'm better at them all together than separate. Like, I'm a jack of all trades, but I'm a master of none.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, it was Ironman, so you still compete in those?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I just did one in September.
So, to date, how many have you done?
I've done 8.
Wow. That's a lot.
That is really cool.
That's pretty amazing.
So, and through that, you obviously found a new way to channel your exercise needs.
I mean, I have to work out or I'd be crazy.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then with that, you said the nutrition part became like a new building block that you had to incorporate into it. Can you tell us a little bit more about, for you, how did you mentally get over the fact that you had to eat more and consume more food than you had probably done your whole life?
Well, up until this point, I'd be deathly afraid of carbs. Like, carbs are evil. You know, you can't eat them. But I quickly realized you can't ride your bike for 5 hours without carbs.
Yeah.
You know? So, it's kind of been a slow process, and actually just this past year I hired a nutritionist, and so she was like, look, you have to eat this. Because even in years past, I was still under fueling because, you know, you don't eat unless you're hungry or, you know, and trying to work off my fat stores or whatever. But you just can't perform at your highest without them. So just working through that with her and...
Does your nutritionalist, now she like almost like a therapist too?
Well, I mean, I've had coaches that become like therapists. It's just.
Sure.
Ironman, I feel like, is such, it's such a, like, a, it's symbolic for like you know, struggles in life. I've never been pregnant, but I equate it to being pregnant. You know, you train for like 9 months and then you go through these 10 to 12 hours of like grueling pain. Yeah. And then at the end, you're like, I did it. Yeah, and it's like the best feeling ever. And then you forget how awful it was and you're like, sign up. I'm doing it.
Yeah. Well, I said this in episodes past, especially with Lauren Chitwood, but I think as humans we're meant to romanticize because there would be
romanticize.
You know what you've done in the past. I think that is something that I'm okay with.
Yeah.
Because I want to have the rose colored glasses on a little bit more so than the dark ones.
Dark ugly spaces.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the dark ugly spaces, do you still kind of go there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started Ironman Louisville in October, which was 2 weeks after Chattanooga, the one I had done before. And it was so cold and raining, and I was starting to get hypothermic, so I dropped out at around mile 27. And so, like, for a week after that, I just cried and was really devastated, I guess. So just... That actually spurred me. I recently started going back to my therapist.
Good
for you. Because I'm like, you know, I'm lying to myself. I'm not being honest. And to still be dealing with these feelings, you know, 10 years after all that, like, I need to
work on this. Like, was there one specific thing that you can remember that may have, like, triggered this? Or like, do you go back like when you start getting into a dark space, does it make you feel like you felt 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's just that constant feeling of not being good enough and self-hatred, like, why aren't you doing it like this, you know, why can't you be better, why, just constant disappointment, it's never good enough. And I think that's why I've always had such high aspirations, because no matter what I did, it wasn't good enough. I had to do something better.
Okay. Yeah.
So like this season, I was like, well, I'm gonna do 3 Ironmans, because that would make me really great, you know. And so then I failed on the 3rd one, and so that stung. But then it's like, this is totally irrational.
Yeah,
you know, the thoughts you're having are irrational.
Yeah, it's irrational.
You understand that, but you still, it's still there.
Yeah.
And that means you're human. Yeah. That's okay.
You just have to learn to control, not even control it, but to work through it instead of letting it take you over.
Now, I know that I've seen you in yoga classes, you know, at Bend and Zen. Is that something that, like, when did you pick up yoga?
So it's funny. When I was anorexic, I was doing yoga constantly.
Oh, wow.
That was, I don't know. I was like obsessed with it. Because it made me feel better, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that was actually, the yoga teacher was like, I can see your tailbone. You can't come back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was mad. I was like, fuck her.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But, and I actually appreciate that. I'm glad she said that. I wish more people would say stuff. Because I've seen girls at the gym, you know, in the last 3 months. And I want so badly to go over and say something to them. Like,
you want to hug them.
Yeah.
You just want to be like, it's not worth it.
I mean, because it's so obvious.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've been doing yoga a long time, and I find that when I'm really mentally struggling, it feels so good to go in there. I mean, I've been in classes where I'll just, like in Yan Yin, I'll just cry like the last 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So,
that's what it's meant for.
I know. Mm-hmm. It's so awesome.
And for the listeners, Yan Yin is a movement based in the first part of class, and then the Yin is a 2-minute static hold for different postures throughout the rest of it.
It's my favorite. I love that class.
You can really take a good nap or release the things you need to. Yeah. And it's meant for the...
It's very therapeutic.
It's grounding.
Yeah.
It's grounding.
I do love that.
I know. I wish they had it more.
Yeah.
Like, I would do it like every day.
I know.
It's
so great.
I love all the restorative. Yeah. It's like you're not... It's meant for a deeper purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're on a really great road to recovery. And I know that you've said, you know, that recovery happens every day. And it's just
it's a journey.
It's a journey. What are you doing now to help your recovery look and feel different than what it's been in the past?
Actually addressing my problems instead of just ignoring them. I just love to bury things and pretend that they're not there.
Yeah. Sorry. Georgie sees a runner.
Oh.
Yeah.
We have a lot of runners in our neighborhood, but yeah. Georgie hates them all equally.
Yeah.
Yeah. She shows equal hatred.
Right.
I'm sorry, okay. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. I love to avoid problems. I always, my husband gets mad at me because he likes to argue, and I'm just like, bye, and I'll just walk away and shut down. So I'm really working on feeling emotions and working through them. And my therapist talks about like family of origin, and that's just how we dealt with everything. Mm-hmm. You just pretended like it wasn't there. And
but how many people could relate to that? Because right. I think that is probably systemic for the time that we all grew up in.
Yeah.
Like we weren't.
Emotions are bad. Don't feel.
If you had one, you had to have them in your room. Mm. Like you could be mad as you want, and you shut that door, and I'm like, okay.
I know.
Like, why are you still crying? I'm still mad.
Well, I don't understand.
He like equated it to conditional love. You know, like your parents would only love you if you behaved how they said you had to behave. And so you take that into adulthood, and, you know, all that repression makes you angry.
Yeah,
and
angry.
Yeah.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. Wow, I love that you're able to see that and you're able to, like, sit in that space right now and start to identify that. Because, I mean.
I agree.
You said before you don't have kids, but when you do have kids, it does, like, you want them
right.
to start feeling emotions. And, like, you're like, how do I help you feel comfortable in your own skin and how you feel? And, right. like, I can't, you know, I look at, like, you know, how our parents raised us, and I look at, like, the generations that raised them, and it's,
they do
like,
the best that they can.
They do the absolute best they can, and it's, like, you weren't allowed to have any emotions, you know, back when,
right.
you know, our parents
children
were
are seen, not hurt.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, that's, I think that was the mantra for yeah. all of, like, the 50s and 60s,
oh,
so
yeah.
it's, like, I can't blame anybody
my kids are
for
really
having
well
that.
Seen.
Yeah.
I think our kids really were good. Pretty well behaved when I saw them.
Oh, yeah. They're good gentlemen, but and for the most part.
Lady.
Yeah, and lady.
She's coming into her own.
But yes, as long as we're drawing attention to that and how we felt, and we're not shaming the ones have come before us. We're just saying, like,
yeah, this is what we're dealing with.
If you have knowledge, why not do better?
Yeah.
It's just a fine line, I think, to walk from, I guess, making them too emotional and out of control and then letting them
explore
because right now like I'm doing clinicals in a pediatric setting and seeing all these kids with like ADHD and oppositional defiant disorder and mood dysregulation, and I feel like, you know, definitely there's some nature to it, but a lot of it's nurture. And I think a lot of the kids are being ignored by the parents, you know, because we live in, like, with the cell phones.
Isolation.
And so it's really, I think it's really affecting the next generation.
What are some signs that you have seen in these kids that maybe...
Or maybe you saw in yourself, too.
Yeah.
I think the anger. A lot of them are really angry. And impulsive. They don't know how to control their emotions.
Is that because they don't know what they're feeling, do you think? Or
they don't know how they're going to be loved.
Yeah, I think it's... I really think it's... I think we grew up in an emotionally unavailable time, and I think we're making our kids the same way.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know this sounds crazy, but I keep saying when I have kids, I'm not letting them have a phone. I'm not doing it. Like, you can have a Go phone that can call my number.
Right.
But I'm not giving you any sort of computer.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like it's ruining the next generation. I don't know. That's just how I feel about it.
We are super connected to this. And, you know, it kind of goes back to addiction, too, where
it's really addictive.
You can have a lot of things you're addicted to to suppress a lot of different feelings. Or obsessive mentality, like where you're obsessive about your diet and
working out.
Maybe you're obsessed with online shopping.
Yeah.
That is an addiction.
I mean, they're addicted to work. Like workaholics.
Work.
I mean, that's a thing.
I've been like
they give them a badge of honor. I'm like, oh, it works so hard. Look at that. It never puts the phone down. And it's like, dude, it's addiction. Like, you're still addicted. Yeah. And
what happens when you do put the phone down?
Right.
Like, what voices are you
exactly,
hearing?
Exactly. Like,
people don't want to hear the voices.
So we're saying, you know, maybe listen to those voices.
Yeah. Well, I shared a TED Talk yesterday where, were saying, like, you need to be bored.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you get creative. And people don't want to be bored. It's
they
like,
don't.
Just sit there and stare out the window. mm-hmm. and just think for a minute.
Right. Yes. You don't always have to be stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I always tell my kids, like, I am not your cruise director.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you can facilitate your own imagination. Yeah. You have a brain. You are creative. I put you on this earth for this reason. Right. Figure it out.
Go, go.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. the things that they come up with sometimes are wonderful, and sometimes, like, okay, I'm still bored. I'm like, okay.
Well, okay. Well, okay. Yeah. that's part of life. Like, you can't be entertained all day, every day. You don't need
to
build a
crystal rocket to, like,
right.
you know.
To not be bored.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So with you doing this next stage and your clinical work, mm-hmm. you know, you've got a lot of really amazing stories and firsthand experience that you're going to be able to take into what you're doing. What do you hope to get out of this? Like, where do you want to see yourself, like, once your doctorate is complete? Like, what would you like to do with it?
Initially, I just want to work in a hospital setting. I've been in the ER for almost 10 years, and I'm just really used to that busy excitement kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And just to, you know, figure out what I'm doing, I definitely want to be in a hospital. And then after that, I would really like to have my own clinic where I just focused on just like the mind, body, soul thing. Mm-hmm. I think that we have a unrealistic expectation about medications. You yes. know, people want a pill for everything, and pills can only get you so far. I think most of us need therapy yeah. and behavior yeah. modification.
Do you think there's a shame along with therapy?
Yeah,
shaming, fact, I mean, like a
it's,
stigma.
Yeah, because it's kind of embarrassing to be like, oh, yeah, I go to therapy. They're like, why do you go to therapy? Because don't you have problems? Like, right. doesn't everyone have problems? Mm-hmm. And it's just nice to get it out, because I'm the kind of person, I mean, this summer I was not sleeping. I'd be up all night just, like, repeating things over and over in my head because I'm just anxious. I'm just naturally anxious. So last week I was there for 2.5 hours. Yeah. I was exhausted when I left. But it just felt so good to, like, you know, talk to someone about what's going on with me, and then have them, you know, bounce back things that are not emotional or mm-hmm. favoring one side or the other, just, mm-hmm. you know, making you evaluate it.
Yeah, that's so great. And yeah. right now in where we live in Louisville, we don't have a place designated for eating disorders, do we?
Okay. That's actually something that I really want to do. Like, mm-hmm. I really want to have a space specific to people with eating disorders, because I don't think it's understood. I think there's
What's
a
the
lot
biggest
of,
misconception around that?
Well, so people are like, just eat. You look fine. Like, you're not fat or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if you tell me I'm not fat. I feel fat. I feel disgusting. Like, I just want to, I was constantly pinching at myself. And even now, this is so crazy, but before I eat, I'll lift my shirt up and look at my stomach. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like a compulsion, which I'm working on, by the way.
Which is great. I mean, I love that you are having the honest conversation and you're opening the door, because I promise you, you're not the only person listening to this.
No.
Or, you know, that there are people like,
There's a lot of people probably nodding. Yeah. Shannon doesn't weigh yeah. herself anymore. She took
no,
off the
don't.
Scale.
Yeah.
I haven't been on a scale. Like, we don't have one in my, well, we have one in my house now, because my husband went through a weight loss journey and
oh, cool.
needed to have one. But prior to that, I mean, I had not had a scale where I lived in like 18 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Because I was like, I'm not, even
You're
like when, yeah, I would get mm-hmm. obsessed about it. And I'm like, I am so over a number telling me what yeah. my worth is and what my value is. And I'm like, I can't do that anymore.
Right.
Like, especially, I mean, I've got two young girls, like.
Oh, they watch.
They watch.
Yes.
And like, that is like the number one thing in this house is like, we don't talk about like the size or shapes of bodies. We talk mm-hmm. about what your body does. Like, what is
right.
it capable of doing? Like
yeah.
your legs? Yeah, they're super strong, because you can jump really high. You can mm-hmm. run really fast. You can, you know, make these fun shapes with them. But like, we don't talk about, you know, and my kids aren't like dainty little flowers. I mean, they are sturdy, stocky kids. And
neither is
I mean,
Luna.
I
Luna's
cringe
not this, like,
when,
little...
you know, like they're 6 and 8 and people are like, oh my God, they're so heavy. And I'm like, could you not label them with a word right now with that? Like
yeah.
for me, I get super hyper aware of it, because uh-huh. like growing up, like there was so much emphasis on
Kate Moss.
Yes. I mean, you look at like pictures and it's like, oh my gosh. And
we would compliment each other and be like, you look hungry. Thanks.
Thanks.
Right?
Do I look emaciated? Can you see my screen? Yeah. I mean, yeah. and so that's the kind of culture that I really hope to avoid.
Right.
You know, with this. And I mean, I don't need to have a pant size tell me like
right.
I'm
no.
good enough or I'm not good enough. Like, I don't need any pant to tell me that. Like,
right.
bunch of bullshit. Like, nor do I need a scale to be like, no, girl, today's a good day. I'm like, no.
It is better than now than it was. You know, there are full-figured models, and there's more out there, but still, I know that we don't use, like, fat in our house, and my kids still knew what it was. Right. You know, like, it's they're going to get it everywhere. It's going to be immersed in, like, today's society, and so just how we combat that and be like, no, they're not, you know. Everybody's different, literally. So it's a work and challenge.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And it's not easy. No. Boy or girl.
No.
Girl, we have a little bit more of a mountain.
There's boys with eating disorders.
But boys, I mean, they pick up on stuff, too.
Well, I mean, it may not even be an eating disorder for guys, but, I mean, I know a lot of guys who are constantly in the gym, like, oh, my legs are so skinny, I got to pump them up, or, look at these arms, they're never going to
be called skinny.
So I'm like, your body dysmorphia is looked and labeled something different than what it is for a female, but it's still the same thing.
Like, there's
still
struggling with way too much emphasis on what people look like. It's annoying.
It is annoying.
I like go through. I'm, and like, that's why I'm deleting social media. Yeah. I'm deleting it. Like, I go back and forth because I'm like,
I don't want you to, because you share your great stories, I get lost in the comments too, because I'm like. Everyone always, like, misses the point. Like, this,
I know.
This, I'm like, oh, they're missing the theme, and I get what you're saying, but it's just like.
I'm like, well, I'm like, not looking for affirmation. I'm trying to explain, like, this, you know.
Is it. Do the work.
Yeah.
Elise is usually promoting, like, guys, like, do that hard mental work. Like, invest in yourself. Show up for yourself mentally, not just physically.
And yeah. I think a lot of times when people come back with comments, it's because they have a lot of self, like, judgment in it. And it's like, well, you may post one thing, but, like, what that person sees in your story, like, it's always so misconstrued because it's the
reality.
Perception. Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, wait a minute. What lens are you looking through to see that?
Like,
or they just want to help, too. Like, I think humans always want to help. But you're like, but that's not what, okay. So we're not shaming those people. I really enjoy your post. And in your post, you see a lot of, like, furry friends. Can you talk about them?
Oh,
you're
gosh.
A dog mom and a cat mom and, like, a fish mom, probably.
I have six animals.
Oh, my gosh. It's so great. I love it.
Three cats and three dogs. I'm trying to get a goat, but my husband won't let me.
Like the miniature goat.
Oh, my gosh. There's a farm right behind me. And he was like, Elise, if you want a goat, I mean, you can keep it at my farm. And I'm like, Travis, please.
Yes, Travis, please.
Please.
I want to buy your goat a sweater. Like a big goat or, like, the miniature ones? Like the kind of, like,
a little
baby
goat.
Oh, my God. Like little sweaters on it?
Oh, my gosh.
With a little horn. And they bounce.
They do bounce.
But I think they're mean as they get older.
Oh.
I think that's a problem.
Oh. Okay.
Well, I mean,
that's what the fence is for.
Can mow your lawn.
True. And I learned this from Barry Cavallari, that the goat poop is, like, very high in, like, nutrients for your grass.
Oh.
So it's really good for your grass.
Okay.
It promotes good grass growth.
We need a goat on Meadowood Court.
I know. FYI, we're having a goat.
We're getting a goat.
That's so funny.
I do want to ask one question, because this is probably my favorite one that I... So, if someone out there is struggling, where can they receive help, either online or in the city of Louisville?
Well, they do have the Couch, which is on Brownsboro Road. It's like an immediate care center for psychiatric services, which I think is awesome.
I never knew what that was.
Yeah,
that's
what it is. But I'm thinking that you have to pay like $100 or $200 up front. So it's not cheap. But if you are on... kind of like a limited budget, Centerstone. It used to be called Seven Counties.
Oh,
but they have a lot of different locations throughout the city that offer counseling services, medication management, all that stuff. Students can go to their healthcare centers, and they have therapists. And I mean, online, I'm really not sure about different services they have. But or you can message me.
And if people want to get in touch with you, how do they find you? Like, on Facebook?
Well, I'm on Facebook, Elise Hawkins, and then Instagram, Elise Monique 8.
Okay,
cool. My middle name's Monique.
My mom
was feeling saucy, I guess.
Saucy.
Yeah, she was.
She's going to be a salsa dancer.
I know. Someday. I used to be so embarrassed by my name. I was like, I want to be Kelly. Kelly Kapowski.
We all want to be Kelly.
Yeah.
We all want to be Kelly.
Yes.
Like, I felt like I was more Jesse. Just about the height.
Oh, I was totally Lisa Turtle.
You were. You were. You so were. Oh, my God. You so were. Okay, so on Crazy Zen, we do our final questions. Oh,
okay.
And since Thanksgiving, what is your favorite side dish?
Ooh.
Or do you have one?
It would be probably green bean casserole.
Oh, that's a good one.
Do you put the Krispies on top?
Oh, yeah.
The Krispies are everything.
I put Krispies on my eggs every morning.
You put Krispies on your eggs?
That is a game changer.
Mm-hmm. I eat the Krispies out of the bag.
They are delicious.
I do, too. They have roasted red pepper Krispies, onion Krispies, and jalapeno Krispies. And I get all three at Kroger.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to Kroger today.
And crispy beets now, too.
Crispy beets?
Uh-huh.
You know, those would be delicious on a salad.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, I really like
crispy. Up in the crispy game. Okay.
All right.
This is great.
Good. This is great. Good to know.
I'm team crispy all the time.
Yes.
I need a crunch.
Wow. Now I'm like thrown for a loop. I don't even know with all this crispy business. Like, it's just swirling in my head. It's crazy. Do you have a favorite emoji?
Okay. I use the crying laughing face a lot. Mm-hmm. And then I really like the one with the glasses and the teeth.
Yeah, it's the little, it's like a little nerd.
The nerd.
Yeah. I love so nerds. Cute. My husband's a nerd.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. I'm team nerd, too, so is my husband.
Yeah. It's so cute.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yes. All right, well, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. This was so fun.
You're such a beautiful soul. And I can't say it enough. Like, I love having you in my life. Even the little snippets I get to see you.
I love coming to your yoga class.
Come today. I gotta brush off now. But yes, and we'll provide all the information, I promise, on all the show notes. This is I won't miss this one. And please reach out to us if you have any questions. We will help you. We will find someone. This is a safe space, safe community. That's what it's here for.